area of expertise that you're interested in pursuing?
Well, I have social media marketing is the degree, like the focus that I'm in. So anything with that, which that's needed a lot, so.
Well, that ought to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that there's lots of opportunity there because people are going more to that. But again, for that reason too, this the market's more competitive. You got a pen?
No. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, mine was sitting there.
I didn't see Micah. So I thought we were all like, Micah's going to sit somewhere.
Where's your wife? She okay?
She's teaching the 2-year-old class.
Oh, okay. I got you. Cool. All right, good deal. Well, thanks for coming. It's good to see you. It's okay. I'll take my mask off since I'm social distance away from y'all. Is that okay with y'all? Mike and I will be teaching class this quarter, and we've got the book of Ecclesiastes, and I'm excited to be doing that. And we're going to have a book that we're going to have for you to look at the lessons on a regular basis. And I'll go into all of that in just a minute, just as a form of introduction. But first, let's start class with a prayer. And Mike, if you don't mind, you'll start the first one here today. But we'll always ask one of you guys to lead a prayer, if you will. Okay?
Okay. Our holy God, our Father in heaven, we humble ourselves before you on this Lord's Day to thank you for another day of life and for your patience and your guidance. We come to acknowledge you as our holy creator and as our merciful God, to express our love for you and our faith in you and our desire to be more like you and to have a close relationship with you and to accomplish your will while we are here. Thank you so much for the church and for the strength we gain by being members of it. Thank you for your word which guides us, and thank you for moments like this where we can study to see what you've saved for us to see through the book of Ecclesiastes. Thank you for all the sincere souls who are here, and we pray your richest blessings upon our effort to know more of your will and to live with the wisdom that you preserve there. We know all this is made possible through Jesus and his sacrifice and his love and his obedience to you, and we do pray that you please remember us through the blood of Christ, and you forgive us of our sins, and help us to be ready to see you even this day. Thank you for all that you give us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Yeah. Okay, so, like I said, we got this book, and it was done by Wilson Adams, and basically, it's not like we're going to go through the book and, you know, ask you to answer the questions and do all those things. You can certainly do that on your own. And what we'll do is we'll pretty much cover a lesson over a Sunday, Wednesday. So the introduction today is going to be today and Wednesday, but I've got a couple things that I want to hand out first. You got the schedule. If y'all will, arm's length, I will give that to you, Micah, and get you to pass that on. And so this is the schedule. This is kind of how we'll go about things. We've got a gospel meeting during the course of the class, which is going to be coming up on March the 21st through the 24th. So we won't have class on Sunday morning or Wednesday night during the gospel meeting, of course. But otherwise, this is what we will be doing, and we'll be able to get through the all of the different lessons that are part of the book, and also the chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes as well. So, we still passing those out? Cameron was going to hold them all for himself instead of sharing with the other half of the book. Okay, so first you've got that. The second thing that I have for you this morning is a list of questions. And so I'm probably going to have a handout something like this on a regular basis. And the idea there is to, you know, get you to think. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to take that list of questions that is going around the room right now And after everybody gets that, I'm going to go through that real quick, okay? Does everybody study the book of Ecclesiastes before? At some point? Some yes, some no. You've read the book of Ecclesiastes, most likely, at some point. I would think everybody probably has. You know, everybody's at different places in this class, okay? So, for example, a show of hands. Who at this point has graduated from college if you were going to college? Okay, so who is currently in the work world? Okay. Who is continuing to pursue their education? And, you know, who is basically, you know, and that's good. So here's the point. It doesn't matter where you are in your life. Ecclesiastes applies to you. It doesn't matter. It applies to Mike. It applies to me. It applies to every one of you. So who's the oldest in the room? Madison, how old are you? 26. 26? Anybody? We ain't nobody older than 26. Ooh, you're the, except for the ancient ones up front. Up front, right? So you're 26 and I am older than 26. He's 50, right?
Yeah.
And I am 64. Wow. It's like, how'd you even walk in here this morning, dude? I mean, I can remember when I was young, you know. And everything is about perspective. What's perspective mean?
Your view of things.
What's that?
Your view of things.
Your view of things. You know. I agree with that. Any other definition of perspective? Your view of things is a good one. Anything else?
It could be used as your personal thoughts on a certain... I guess it's the same thing as view.
Say it again.
Personal thoughts. I don't know if that's the same as view.
Yeah, that's just another way of thinking about it. But how are those derived? How are those developed? So in 26 years, Madison, how have you developed your view of things?
Through life experience.
Through life experience. Through your personal life experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, how else?
Through the content you consume.
Through what?
The content you consume.
Ooh, I like that. Through the content you consume. That sounds like a marketing person right there. N-S-U-M-E. Through the content that you consume. And in what forms?
Reading, TV, interpersonal relationships, everything.
Everything. TV, videos, movies. Text, Facebook, Snapchat, you personal interactions, right? Through that's a real concise way to say it. Through the content that you consume, that's how your view of things or your personal thoughts are formed, which ultimately creates your perspective. Now, you know, what about the scriptures that we read about that talks about the friends that we keep or the folks that we associate ourselves with? That's the personal relationships that you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not running with the people that you ought to be running with, how's that going to affect your perspective? Lawson?
I mean, how does people's perspective of us?
No, I mean, if you're not running with the right people, how can the wrong people impact your perspective?
I mean, they could lead us further away from God.
Yeah, They can make you maybe rethink or reconsider your view of things. Or your personal thoughts, influence your personal thoughts in a negative way. So, you know, we've got to think about what really matters to us. And what, so let's say for example, we got Cameron going to FC right now. We got Micah going to FC right now. So let me ask you this. Is everybody at FC straight down the road? Immediately they both start, no. And I've known of people that have gone to FC who have lost their way, went down there with good intent, and got with the wrong people, and their perspective was, it got them in trouble instead of helping them or encouraging them or making them stronger. Do you feel like you've been stronger? Do you feel like you've been stronger? Now, you've been there, you're going on year four, right?
Third
year. Do you feel like you've been made stronger by being there? Why?
Because of the relationships I made down there.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just saying that the relationships I made have encouraged me.
Okay. And Cameron?
Yeah. Pretty much the same thing. People there just help you kind of get in the right mindset.
Because McCord, Mike, I don't know you as well, but I know him better. And so what I think I know it's done for you is that it reinforced what you already thought, felt, and believed. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So it's had a positive impact on your perspective, because what did it do?
I mean, like you said, it helps kind of confirm my personal thoughts.
It reinforced. It confirmed or reinforced. Okay, so perspective is so important. So when you're looking for a job, right? What are people wanting to know about who you are and what you have to offer?
Your skill set.
Does that have anything to do with this?
In a way, yeah.
Okay, it does. Well, explain that a little bit.
Like if you're in the customer service, your perspective on things, so your experience and the content that you're consuming can either help you in customer service or it can take away. So if you're around more kind people, you tend to be more kind in customer service.
Okay.
Or you can have more empathy towards people. Whereas if you're around the wrong people, that's not as developed, so it's harder to be in that customer service.
So what about your specific skill set? How has that helped you with regard to getting a job?
Like, for what we went to college for, like design-wise?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's helped a lot.
So what you're telling everybody what your thing is? Well, tell everybody what your education is.
Oh, I have a degree in interior design.
Okay.
So I'm in, and a certificate in kitchen and bath design.
Okay.
So I do residential. So I can do remodels or construction.
So right now, your perspective of education and your interpersonal skills help you get a job at Embellish.
That, knowing the right people.
Well, that helps too. Yeah, it does. It does. But still, you had to get in there and prove yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they weren't just going to let you ride their coattails if you couldn't get in there and produce.
That, or if I didn't have any experience.
Right. So, but you brought perspective to the table from an education standpoint, from how you deal with people standpoint, and you've been able to prove yourself. Yeah. But it's all because of who they thought you were, too. Mm-hmm. Right? In addition to that education. So when you're going to look for a job, how important is past experience?
It's crucial, especially if you're dealing with people. So, and that kind of goes with your perspective too, because I work specifically with social services. So I have to have that empathetic perspective and that giving perspective And a lot of the times people want you to have a godly perspective, a religious perspective, because it helps you care about other people.
So, and what about insurance?
How does it not affect, so what, taking things from the Bible and applying it to sales, you know, love your neighbor, treating people how you want to be treated.
How old are you, Lawson?
23.
Just turned 23.
Yeah.
And so how important is trying to know about, what's empathy?
Understand where someone else is coming from.
Yeah.
The struggles they've already went through.
Right. And so that's a little bit like this, right? It's a little bit like that, even though you may not have personally experienced something they're dealing with, being empathetic toward them. Okay?
Yeah.
So you understand how important that is. How long have you been doing this?
Insurance?
Yeah.
Just over a year.
Okay, just over a year. But you understand how important that is.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand when you go and tell somebody that they're going to pay $20,000 more in insurance. You know, they don't see it as an asset. They just see it as another bill. You have to understand where they're coming from, just trying to feed their family. And maybe not trying to be aggressive towards you, but it's just something you have to overcome.
So why is Ecclesiastes a really good study for all of us right now? Why is it?
Because it's a book that provides life experience.
Sir?
It's a book that provides life experience.
It's a book that provides life experience. It's a book that can tell us a lot about what matters and what doesn't. So let me just ask you this. Based on what y'all know today, and you're going to get the questionnaire, and we're going to talk more about this on Wednesday night, but what do you think Ecclesiastes is all about? I'm not going to call on anybody. But as you can tell, I thrive on getting everybody engaged in talking in this class. So what is the book of Ecclesiastes all about? From what's in all the things that you've seen before and what you've read before, go ahead and turn over in your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes. And if there's any scriptures in particular that stick out to you, tell me some of those things that you think about with regard to Ecclesiastes that you think are important.
I mean, from the very beginning, he kind of says, what's the point of it all? He says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? So he says, what do I gain from working every day of my life? What is the point of it all? Is pretty much what he's trying to grasp for. And I mean,
so what does that mean, Cameron, to you, from your perspective?
I mean, it's kind of just big picture question, what's the point of my life if nothing is going to come out from it?
So what's the point of my life? Okay. What else? That's a good one. What's another point from Ecclesiastes?
I think the most well-known one is, of course, at the end of Ecclesiastes, where the conclusion when all has been heard is fear God.
What's that? It's 12:13. Okay.
But yeah, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person.
So let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So what do you take from that?
For me personally, it's very empowering, because to me it means that no matter what I'm worried about or what's going on in life, the thing that matters most is God and what He has to say.
No matter what happens,
what God has to say matters most.
God has what? I'm sorry?
Whatever God has to say matters most. I think that's a good one.
Okay. Okay, great. What else? Anything else?
It deals a lot with managing and how to, or managing your wisdom, where to apply it.
Okay. Okay, now, of course, you've opened another box here. What is wisdom? Think about that before you answer. What is wisdom? Okay, I'm going to get both answers here.
Application of your knowledge.
Application of knowledge?
I would say like knowledge you develop like throughout your life, you know.
Application and developed. I like both of those things, but there's one thing I would add to that. Well, no, I guess this is it right here. Sorry. It's the application of knowledge that you have learned over your life and how you apply it. So, we're going to get into this, into the introduction with regard to Solomon, because I think there is plenty of information that documents that Solomon is the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes. There are some people that don't think he is, but I think he is, based on the evidence and all the information that there is to back it up. But when you think about the life of Solomon, was Solomon a godly man?
In the beginning.
He started out that way. But what happened to Solomon?
His, the people around him, his wives, they influenced him away.
Boom. What, didn't we just talk about that a while ago? Huh?
We just taught that in the lower grade classes.
So. You did? So, but didn't we just talk about that like at FC? I mean, you go in there and you got to decide who you're going to be. You got to decide what's important. It's either going to reinforce what you've learned your entire life and you're going to be stronger in that, or you're going to not. And, you know, that's, I don't care if you're Jim Holton, Mike Thomas, Micah, McCore, it doesn't matter who you are, life is about this word right here. Cameron, what's the word I'm going to write? Come on. Started with a C.
Character?
No, come on, man. Choices. Life is about choices. Isn't it? Careers you choose. People that you associate yourself with. Things that are the most important to you. And so Solomon came into it in a pretty big way as son of David and into the role of king. Madison, we ought to have you teach this part, if you were in that lower grade class. But Solomon did some incredible things, didn't he? I mean, he was one of the most prolific builders in ancient history. The palace, right? I mean, it took, was it 7 years, I think, on the palace? And 15 years on...
The temple took 7 years.
His temple was 7 years, and then his palace was 15. He built a great fleet of boats. He had all the money in the world, and because he was king, he had other kingdoms that paid tribute to him. What about women?
He was good in that department too.
Yeah, that was a real problem for him, wasn't it? So at some point, all of this changed Solomon's perspective. And his view of things changed. But then, toward the end of his reign, somewhere probably between 930 and 940, probably 935 BC, he kind of came to his senses of understanding just how meaningless so many of the things he had done was in his life. And, you know, I guess the sad part of that is, the wisdom in that is to be able to learn from your mistakes and to be able to fix them, would you agree? But at the same time, you know, was there a price to pay for all the mistakes that he made? Yeah, there was. So, you know, is there going to be a price to pay if we go down the road that God doesn't intend for us to? There is a price to pay. So we've got to decide what's important to us and how we're going to go about living our lives on a daily basis. So I'll get into some of the specifics. And I asked this question right here. What's the first thought that comes to your mind when you think about the book of Ecclesiastes? And we've already... Anybody else want to give anything else as it relates to what you think about when you think about Ecclesiastes?
Seasons of life.
Okay, that's a good one. What does that mean?
Well, kind of like what it says in chapter 3. There's a time for everything. There's a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. So through life you go through different stages or different seasons.
Right.
So like right now, a lot of the people in here are going through this season of college and learning and developing that. Whereas some of us are in the workforce and we're in that season just getting started.
Right.
And then eventually, hopefully, some of us, well, one of us, is in the season of marriage.
Right. That's right. That's good. Those are all good. Well, three of us. Actually. Thank you.
I'm us.
No, I got you. You as the class. I got you. So here's the other thing, too, and that I would say to you as it relates to, it doesn't necessarily relate to this book. I mean, but did King David, did he have problems? I mean, if you think about it, it was kind of the same path. When David started out, he was all God, right? And then what happened? Then David became very powerful as king, and then David used that power to do what? Commit adultery. And then have a woman's wife murdered. Have a woman's husband murdered. Excuse me. So, you think Solomon saw all that, right?
Well, he saw the aftermath. What it did to his mother.
He saw all of it. I mean, he was right there. So, Solomon could have chose to not go down that path. I mean, he started out right, but then he let things, and it was a pretty... So, transfer that to us today. You know, do we have to be who our fathers or mothers were? And sometimes, and here's the other thing, sometimes, and don't take this in a bad way, you don't always get to choose who your mom or dad is. My children didn't get to choose me as their father. I just was their father. And for whatever good or bad that was, they got what they got. I didn't get to choose my mother or father. My mother was a Christian, my father was not. So I had the influence of my mother as a Christian, but I had the influence of my father as not a Christian. So I had to choose what I would do, because I am an individual that's going to be held accountable for me. Nobody else will held accountable for me. Nobody will account for him or any of you except for us individually. So I have to decide for myself. And early on, I made some big mistakes. Now, I'm not going to blame that on my dad, but it certainly didn't help any. The fact that I did not have the benefit of a father influence that was a Christian. But I can't blame it on him, because ultimately it's my choices that I had to make about what I would do or wouldn't do. And fortunately, at the ripe old age of 20, I did realize God's got to be in control. And so ever since then, for 44 years now, he has been. That doesn't mean I haven't made mistakes, but what it does mean is I know where I should be centered and what should be most important to me. Now, as you go through life, you face challenges. King Solomon faced challenges and decisions that you have to make. Sometimes you'll make good decisions. Sometimes you'll make bad decisions. But if God and what he says is most important, then 99.9% of the time, you'll make the right decision. That might not be the most popular worldly decision with regard to, you know, houses and cars. Because, I mean, what's making money about with regard to a job? Why do you go to college to get an education? Be able to get a decent job, right? To be able to prove to somebody that you have put, or if you're another skill that you develop, that you want to be able to do something specifically, doesn't necessarily mean that you've got to have a four-year college degree, right? I didn't have a four-year college degree, and I've done okay. But I worked and applied myself and everything else to be able to try and make that happen. Some people have fields of specialty where they require that degree and want you to have that to be able to do what they want you want to do and they want you to do for them. So again, that's an individual choice that somebody has to make about what they're going to do. So, you know, you don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to. Lots of times there's all kinds of different things that you can do where that's not a requirement. But at the same time, where are you going to go with your life? What do you want to do? And then how are you preparing yourself to be able to do that? And as you go through life, as you go through these different seasons of life that Madison's talking about, then you have to make choices about what's important and what you want to do and what you will do and won't do and whether you're going to let God influence and direct what happens in your life. Thoughts, questions? Any ideas on any of that? What about working out there in the real world? I mean, anything different than the way that you thought it would be?
Meet a lot of mean people.
You meet a lot of mean people. So does that create an opportunity for you to have a choice to decide what you're going to do? Who you're going to be? And that's what you just got to always remember. And you just got to try and bring the best perspective to the table that you possibly can. Okay, let's go on here. So, the definition of Ecclesiastes talks about assembly or congregation. It also talks about preacher or teacher. And ultimately, it is the conveyor of an assembly, the speaker at an assembly, or a collector of wise sayings. When you think about the definition of the word Ecclesiastes, in both the Hebrew and Greek translations, they point to the same direction with regard to what they say and how they're interpreted. So that's the ultimate conclusion that we're going to use, is it's the wise preacher or teacher, and that's Solomon in the congregation of Israel and the things that he had to say. So do I have that on there twice? It appears that I do. So some say that Solomon is not the writer of Ecclesiastes. And here's the defenses that they use. They say words that are included in the text that would impact the period of time that the book was written don't jive. That's one of the things that they say. They argue that even in 1 and chapter 1 and verses 1 and 12, where basically it says Solomon is the writer, it's quickly abandoned, referring to that authorship. Like, why wouldn't he do that throughout the book? Why wouldn't he do that more prolifically through 12 chapters? They also talk about the fact that the writer is more critical toward kingship, distant if not critical, and more about dealing with kings than ruling as a king. And there's lots of details that the ones that take that position believe to defend those positions, but I don't think it really holds water, and most everything I've read, it's the same way. So I'm going to show you some of the reasons that we think that yes, he is. First, again, go back to the same one that they used to make their point about 1 and 1:12, and I believe that it does reinforce the fact that he is the who he is, the son of David, the ruler that he was, and I think that's good evidence. No one else fits the claim of the author, the son of David, and the king of Jerusalem in verse 12. The preacher was claiming to be King Solomon. The preacher, was king over Israel. In chapter 12, in verses 1 through 8, it seems to be a retrospect of his life near the end of his reign as king. And again, like we said, between 930 and 940, and probably about 930 BC is when it was written. And if someone else was the author, why would they misrepresent themselves initially in the book and take away their credibility for what was written? And why would God allow this to happen in his inspired revelation? And if it was somebody that was trying to make people believe that it was Solomon and then it was not, then it would take credibility away from the writing of the text. So, those are some of the reasons, and there's more. And Mike, if you want to add anything at any point, don't hesitate to jump in there. Sorry.
Well, no one had the success that Solomon had. And when you look in the record of Kings and Chronicles, it was at,
right,
the zenith with him. Because even after he was gone, his son Rehoboam was reigning in Jerusalem. And that's, you're going to pin everything around that, the son of David in Jerusalem.
Right.
We know the kingdom split after Solomon.
Right.
But Rehoboam, you can read the account just 5 years into his reign. The gold shields that Solomon had made were taken from him. So the kingdom diminished quickly after Solomon. And yet the perspective of the writer of Ecclesiastes, even in chapter 2, saying, look, I had all the gold.
Right.
All the gold, right. I had more than anyone before me or after.
Well, all the tribute that was brought to him that I spoke of earlier, exactly. That's part of where that comes from, too. Yeah.
But, and even his son lost all that.
Right, yeah, very quickly.
Yeah.
Other things that have been said that I researched, writing similar with other writings and linguistic characteristics of other ancient wisdom literature, it's been compared through terms, concepts, and writing structure to other writings of the period. And some of the work that was cited that was How to Handle Inferiors and Superiors, Addressing the Work of Government Officials, other works addressing moral, political, and religious advice, and another work was the Epic of Gilgamesh, I guess, that bears similarities to Ecclesiastes 9 and chapter 9 and verses 7 through 9. And I'm going to see if I can find that to kind of read that to you. It's funny when you read how it sounds. Sorry, let's see. Oh yeah, here we go. Hence, rejoice in your heart. Forgetfulness profits you. Follow your heart as long as you live. Put myrrh on your head. Dress in fine linen. Anoint yourself with oils fit for a god. Heap up your joys. Let not your heart sink. Follow your heart and your happiness. Do not do your things on earth as your heart commands. Different perspective, but it's more of a worldly perspective in the things that are said in that writing. But the writing style is much the same. And that's what they were basically trying to reinforce. And again, when you look at the historical connections and the great wisdom that he claimed to have, and the great wisdom that was given to him by God, when you think about the Proverbs that are associated with Solomon and the Proverbs that are associated with Ecclesiastes, when you think about the wealth that he had and the wealth that we know of that King Solomon had as well. When you think about the building projects that we spoke of earlier and where he talks about in Ecclesiastes all the great building that he has done. When he talks about the women, and we know how many concubines and wives that King Solomon had. And again, why is that a problem? I mean, just practically speaking, why is that a problem? So, you've been married for how long?
30 years.
30 years. 37 for me. So why is, I think it was 1,000 altogether between the princesses and the concubines. Why is that a problem?
No intimacy. How can you know anybody, you know, if you have that many people in your life?
Wife number 567.
There's no bond. I'm wealthier. You're wealthier than Solomon in that regard. You know, even he acknowledged that.
Right. And so why is, I mean, it's just so no. Any other perspective there on recently married guy?
I couldn't imagine.
Exactly. It's all I can do, take care of one wife. You know, and I'm sure they feel the same way. I'm sure a wife feels the same way. I mean, can you imagine trying to reverse that? And so, if you were Solomon as whatever, and then you had 1,000 men, that doesn't make any sense at all. It is all about vanity. And thinking that that's going to be something that's going to make you happy. And what a mess. And what, I mean, it was those women that he basically said were the ones that turned him away from his relationship with what God says and what needed to happen in their lives. So, you know, I mean, but still, he had to make a choice. He made lots of bad choices. But anyway, comparable statements of 1 Kings and Ecclesiastes. Lots of parallels that show up there between those two that would cause you to realize that Solomon was the author. So the summary is there is more evidence to support that he was the writer of Ecclesiastes. In fact, I believe there's significant proof to support that he is the author. So there's his driver's license photograph. I always love it when you throw a picture up of somebody, you know, and it's this drawing or interpretation that people have of Solomon. And there were a number of pictures I could have chosen from, but I chose to pick the one that looked like he might be toward the end of his reign, and that he was, you know, that he had writings that he had been a part of, and, you know, logging what he wanted to be able to tell anybody. And we talked about this too. The date of the book, again, based on everything that we know, is between 940 and 930, probably 935. Would be the time toward the end of his reign. And when you think of all the things that were a part of his life and the things and experiences that he had had, it was a great deal of information to share with us today through God's divine message. And for Solomon to, I mean, God always used everybody and everything that happened to his ultimate benefit. So that there would be benefit from it. And even though Solomon messed up, God still used Solomon's life and how he messed up as an opportunity for us to learn. And that's what we need to try and do with the book of Ecclesiastes, is learn from the experiences of Solomon. So I'm going to get into this. I probably won't get it finished, but we'll finish it up Wednesday night. And make sure that you answer those questions. Because I do want to get everybody, now we're not going to go through and have everybody answer absolutely every question, but what I do want to do is I want you to be able to think about that and bring some answers to the table. So, he talked about the things that he saw, he talked about wisdom, he talked about vanity, he talked about things that happen under the sun, he talked about striving after the wind. What's striving after the wind mean to you? What do you think that means?
Gripping at nothingness.
What's that?
Gripping at nothingness.
Gripping at nothingness, okay. Anybody else?
I'd be going for something that's impossible to go after.
Okay, gripping at nothingness, going after something that's impossible to get. When you think about striving after the wind, trying to catch something that you can't get a hold of. What about you, preacher?